It's Wednesday, the 28th of August, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, could a prisoner swap deal between Russia and Ukraine lead to an improvement in relations?
It's certainly a good step towards more dialogue, a step that could kind of usher in the Normandy format talks on eastern Ukraine.
Plus, fears grow of a crackdown in Hong Kong as protests show no sign of quelling. Australia considers reforming its notoriously rowdy question time in Parliament. And a wardrobe update on board Japan Airlines takes flight crew uniforms to new heights. I'm Ben Ryland in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Diplomatic efforts are underway between Russia and Ukraine in the hope that a prisoner swap may be held before the end of this week. If successful, observers say the deal could help pave the way for an improvement in the relationship between Moscow and Kiev. Alec Lun is Moscow correspondent for London's The Telegraph newspaper. Alec, bring us up to speed with the background to this prisoner swap.
Ukraine elected a new president 2 months ago, Volodymyr Zelensky. He's a comedian, a TV show star who unexpectedly swept into the presidency. One of his main campaign promises was to hold a prisoner swap with Russia. He's promised a more pragmatic relationship with Russia, which of course annexed Crimea from Ukraine in 2014 and has been backing pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine, simmering conflict there in which more than 13,000 people have been killed. It does look now like that promise is going to be fulfilled. Reports in the media suggesting that up to 66 prisoners, 33 from each side, could be exchanged as soon as this week. High-level representatives have been going back and forth between Kiev and Moscow. And really, there's no reason it couldn't happen. Both sides want to show that they're not holding up progress on solving the eastern Ukraine conflict.
With all of that in mind, Alec, how likely is it that this particular prisoner swap deal could affect dialogue between Moscow and Kiev?
Well, I just don't think it's going to be able to change the underlying dynamics of the conflict. It's certainly a good step towards more dialogue, a step that could kind of usher in the Normandy format talks on eastern Ukraine. But as we've seen over the past 5 years, the conflict in eastern Ukraine is really entrenched. Russia really actually, I think, enjoys having this kind of lever and control over Ukraine. Every time Kiev does something that Moscow doesn't like, it can cause Kiev lots of trouble. Zelensky may want to strike a new tone and have a more pragmatic relationship, but his hands are tied to a certain extent because Ukrainian politics is very polarized, very anti-Russian to this day. Most Ukrainians see Russia as an invading force that has taken over large parts of their country. That's why something like a prisoner exchange, which is kind of a feel-good moment for both sides, is much more achievable than any sort of lasting progress on solving the conflict in eastern Ukraine.
Alec Lewin in Moscow, thank you. Hong Kong's reputation as a global business hub has, historically speaking, partly rested on its trusted approach to government and strong rule of law. Now, however, with the ongoing protests showing no sign of quelling, the city's future could depend on how Beijing chooses to proceed.
There is no end in sight to the standoff between the Hong Kong government and protesters who continue to flood the streets opposing the anti-extradition bill. The latest swathe of violent clashes over the weekend brought the unrest to a significant milestone. It has outlasted 2014's umbrella movement, which saw pro-democracy activists occupy the streets for 79 days. Chief Executive Carrie Lam has affirmed that she will not bend to protesters' demands, nor will she declare a state of emergency that would pave the way for intervention from Beijing. Meanwhile, a new academic term gets underway next week. Schools and universities are preparing for a citywide student boycott. Memories of the umbrella movement and its failure to establish a real democracy in Hong Kong are likely to stiffen the resolve of protesters in the coming weeks.
For more on the developing situation in Hong Kong, tune in to today's edition of The Globalist on Monocle 24. Details at our website.
The member for Calvert will resume his seat.
The Australian Parliament has never been famous for its civility or decorum. The idea that elected officials set an example for the rest of us has long formed the basis of punchlines everywhere. In Australia, however, efforts are now underway that could change the nature of Parliament's question time. Karen Middleton is the chief political correspondent for the Saturday Paper in Canberra. Karen, Barack Obama told Australia's former Prime Minister Julia Gillard that he really envied Australia's question time, much to the amusement of Ms Gillard, no doubt. Now, for the uninitiated, what is question time?
It's an opportunity for opposition parties to ask government ministers questions directly. But the way that it's structured is that government ministers can also be asked questions from their own side. So their own backbenchers will bowl up questions that they've usually cooked up in advance, known as Dorothy Dixers, after an American columnist who was rumoured to have written her own questions for her newspaper column. So the Dorothy Dixers become a bit tedious for people because they tend to be the government backbenchers asking the ministers to comment on how fantastic the government is and how terrible the opposition is. But otherwise, it is an opportunity every day for the two sides to actually meet in person and joust over public policy.
So, Karen, I don't really need to ask this myself, but for our international listeners, why has question time become so unpopular?
Well, the Dorothy Dixers are a problem, but certainly the general behaviour is something that people are very unhappy about. A lot of school children come into the parliament every day that it's sitting. There are galleries that are enclosed very high up above the chamber, behind glass, for the children to watch the parliamentary proceedings. And there's always a lot of shock and astonishment that the behaviour of politicians is as bad as it is, that they yell and scream at each other, that they throw tantrums and that they're generally very poorly behaved. And the view of the school kids and other members of the public who come is that they're not setting a very good example.
Karen, if you look deeper at the underpinnings of what question time is supposed to be and what it actually is, do you see an argument for reforming it?
Well, there's a parliamentary committee that looks at procedures of the parliament that is holding an inquiry into the prospect of changing question time. It's not very clear how they would change it, but there is allegedly anyway an appetite between both the government and the opposition to try and tidy it up a bit, to make people behave a little bit better, to see if they can get a bit more information out of question time, which is what it was designed for, really, for the opposition to be able to ask questions and extract information from the government. Whether they end up removing those Dorothy Dix questions remains to be seen. But I do think it would be good if there was some way of turning it into a more practical, useful tool. It is a good opportunity for people to see the parliamentarians challenging each other, and that's an important element of the Westminster system. But it would work a lot better if we didn't just have preset questions and a bit of grandstanding and a running of lines that have been practiced before the mirror in the morning.
So wrong. I suggest to the Leader of the Opposition, sack your shadow assistant treasurer. It's him.
Karen Middleton in Canberra, thank you. And finally today, a sartorial view from our editorial floor.
In Japan, recent months have seen workers railing against company bosses who force female employees to wear high heels to work. So much so that actor Yumi Ishikawa has launched a campaign called Kutsu, a play on the words kutsu and kutsu, and petitioned for the government to legislate against draconian dress codes. With workwear a recurring flashpoint in the gender debate, details on Japanese Airlines' upcoming uniform update are timely. For the first time in the company's history, female cabin crew will have the option to wear a trouser suit. Due for takeoff in 2020, coinciding with the Olympics, the company wants to smarten up in time for visitors. The uniform has been designed under the direction of Japanese fashion designer Yasutoshi Izumi. One issue that won't thrill the shoe activists, heels of up to 5 cm will remain standard, although the firm will listen to feedback. Still, at a time when Japanese companies are fielding bad press for stuffy dress codes, Japan Airlines refresh is a fashion win.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Thursday.